this is Common Ground. Last December, the Mexican government devalued the peso, a move that set off an economic crisis in that country.
I think it is a temporary setback. They'll get their act together. They'll straighten up their political and economic system. Those of us along the border will ultimately benefit greatly by their improvements.
Well, I mean, you know, a temporary setback, what does that mean? Mexican people now have earnings less than they did in the early 1980s. I mean, you know, so how long will it take them to get back where they were then? I'm not sure what I call temporary.
Probably the worst result from it, from what I can tell now, is the crisis of confidence. Mexicans are less sure of themselves and their capacity to manage this relationship, which really was a bid for leadership to be a major country.
In this edition of Common Ground, we look at economic relations between the United States and Mexico. It's been a year and a half since NAFTA was put into effect, and a half year since the peso devaluation. How's everyone doing? Is the future bright or bleak? Program on world affairs and the people who shape events. It is produced by the Stanley Foundation. I'm Jeff Martin. In late 1993, Congress passed the North American Free Trade Agreement, ending a hot political debate that had stretched on for years. Supporters of NAFTA argued that it was necessary to boost trade, the step needed to prepare for a bright economic future on the continent. Opponents said it was a deal that benefited rich guys on both sides of the border and that ordinary working people would be hurt. After a year and a half and a major peso devaluation in Mexico, can we tell who was right? Michael Blum is an economic development consultant in the border city of McAllen, Texas. He was an early supporter of NAFTA and is still a believer in its benefits.
Well, I was very much involved proactively in trying to bring about the NAFTA passage of NAFTA, even long before the word got coined. I participated in an event at a conference back in 89 when the whole concept of a North American free trade concept was first put together. In the nature of my business in McAllen is partially involved in a recruiting industry to our community, and Mexico is a very important part in that equation. We don't look upon Mexico as being on the other side of the border. It's just that river runs through it, and we promote McAllen Reynosa as though it were one community. And we've learned through studies that for every job we create in Mexico, we create almost more than one job on the U.S. side. And so there's a direct relationship in our economy.
Obviously, there's a lot of economic activity that goes on across the border anyway. What impact does NAFTA have, the treaty itself, have on that? And what impact have you seen since it's been passed?
Well, that's hard to answer, and for a couple of reasons. One, we were living NAFTA before NAFTA happened. And so it's difficult to measure the true impact because we were full-blown integrated before the rules got changed. The thing that is interesting, over the 12-month period, we had an increase in trade. Substantial increase in trade, both cargo trucks and as well as vehicle. Our retail sales growth was substantial over the year, about a $150 million increase in the McAllen city itself, and an explosive growth in the new construction of single-family homes, multifamily homes, and retail stores and healthcare facilities and virtually every area that you can imagine. And a similar thing occurred in Reynosa. In the last 5 years, there's been in one part of Reynosa, in one industrial park, over 2 million square feet of manufacturing plants were built. And a good part of those were built, a couple of 300,000 of that was built in the last year. And it was built because plans had been made in anticipation of NAFTA. It appeared it was going to happen, and so the construction started. And now that even after the devaluation, in other parts of Mexico, things have come to a screeching halt. That has not happened in Reynosa. We have new announcements about two a month still, and major plants. And some of these plants are from the Pacific. that are coming over because Mexico is just clearly world-class competitive. And that's the bottom line. It's making good product on a timely basis and doing it in a price point that's world-class competitive.
John Wirth was also an early advocate of NAFTA, but for different reasons. As a professor at Stanford University and the president of the North American Institute, Wirth is a student of the North American continent. He saw NAFTA as a virtual inevitability.
I began to sense in the university at Stanford a real change in position on the part of Mexicans, that they were coming to conferences much more open and much more willing to discuss a relationship with Americans that was different. And then when I went to a few conferences with Canadians and Mexicans, there was a chemistry there that was totally new. So I would say I began to catch on around 1987, just before the free trade issue with Canada really came to a final head, probably 1986, actually. And it was in the air. And it was a perception on the part that interdependence had gone to such an extent that we had to begin to manage our relationship better together instead of just simply as bilateral issues. We had to look at it as a range, totality of issues.
One of the difficulties of integrating this region is that you've got two countries, Canada and the United States, which are quite prosperous, and Mexico, which has got a large population and is not very prosperous at all. What kind of problems do you see that presenting?
Well, it is a very unusual situation where you get two rich countries and one developing country joining in this type of a very close association. But the great promise of it is, if we can pull it off, and I, from my way of thinking, the biggest challenge of all is how to create a higher standard of living for everyone without ruining the environment. And if this is where the relationship with Mexico comes in, for the rest of the developing world, if Mexico can have it return to a high rate of growth with good environmental management, with the close association of Canada and the U.S., we really have a chance to work on the North-South issues, which are the driving issues facing humanity now and in the future, population, resource allocation, the environment, and then how you provide for a standard of living for the whole population. This is, in world terms, it's a first-class issue. So that we're into something that transcends just the immediate interest of in larger markets, and that's very important. But the overall implications of this are really profound.
Less enthused about NAFTA, in fact opposed to it, was Pete Garcia, president of Chicanos por la Causa.
Chicanos por la Causa is a statewide community development corporation in Arizona. We operate a variety of programs that are involved in economic development, housing, and social services. We have offices in 23 different cities in Arizona. We're very involved in working with public officials, as well as working with community people and some of the needs in those particular communities that we work in. Our initial position with NAFTA was a negative position because of the majority of the people that we deal with are first-line people going into the, especially in the employment area. We have several employment and training programs, older worker training, retraining, displaced homemakers. And our position was that through the way it was proposed, many of the folks that we dealt with would lose or not have those positions available. So we initially were against NAFTA. We met with our congressman, and we met with I went to Mexico City a couple of times. We met with some of the Mexican officials that came to Arizona. We were able to get some concessions on how the effect of NAFTA would affect the individuals that needed employment, and how we would, you know, some of that protection would exist for our folks.
We're somewhat more than a year into the implementation of NAFTA now. Have some of your fears played out, or how has it looked so far?
Well, so far, we haven't really seen that much change. I think some of the real change that has occurred has come from the state level, in that the governor's office in Arizona has taken a real active role in developing relationships along the border with cities, on trying to marry both sides of the border with the different cities, as well as developing relationships with governors in a number of bordering states and other states that have proximity to Arizona in Mexico. So there's been quite a bit of work that the governor, the Arizona-Mexico Commission, which was a very dormant organization that didn't really do much, now has a lot of power, has really started to concentrate on pulling together trade missions and really looking at, you know, how can Arizona benefit Arizona in the largest Arizona newspaper put out a list of all the different countries that Arizona was trading with, and Mexico had just surpassed the United Kingdom as the largest trading partner, and trade with Mexico was up like 20-some%. So the leadership at the governor's level has been very positive. We've met with a number of different chambers of commerce, different mayors along the border, and some of the things that we're seeing is there's a new, I think a new hope, a new expectancy that there will be some changes. A lot of the small businesses that in one of the trips that we went to Mexico City that had a number of small businesses with us, a lot of the small business had anticipation. One of the things that's starting to occur now, and I think the first portion of this leadership development was the governmental sector. The second phase now is trying to move the expectation of trade, jobs, different opportunities. Now the small business sector is now getting involved in very specific how to trade and how to develop different programs with Mexico. Our programs that we administer, and we administer six small business lending programs from microloans to rural loans in a variety of different parts of the state, has seen an upswing in the demand for those kinds of resources. We've also started an incubator program, also an incubator in Yuma County, which is along the border. So there's been a large demand for startup business and looking at trade in that particular area.
Rodolfo de la Garza is an expert on Mexico at the University of Texas, where he is the Mike Hogg Professor of Community Affairs in the Government Department. I asked him if NAFTA has been the boon to Mexicans that its leaders had hoped it would be.
No, clearly not, and there are two reasons. One is it was dramatically oversold and did not have the support of a large segment of the business community that knew it was going to be hit very hard and in fact was hit. Then those problems got exacerbated by the economic crisis, so that we really don't know how it would have played out but for the economic crisis. But we do know that there has been some severe dislocation in Mexico, loss of jobs, downsizing in businesses and inefficiencies. And all of that was to be expected, but it got so oversold that nobody knew it was coming.
Critics of NAFTA have often said that it was a deal that benefited the elites in the United States and the elites in Mexico. Is that your take on it as well?
Well, it's clear that there's a big element of that. There seems to be, while Mexico's economy was going well, we were, a lot of elites as well as working people in the United States were benefiting from it because exports were increasing. That meant jobs were growing in the United States and wages were doing well. And on the Mexican side, consumers were getting better products at cheaper prices. On the other side of that, some of the working classes in Mexico and the small businesses got hit very hard because they were not competitive. And the dilemma was that Mexico, in my judgment, pushed so fast on this that it didn't prepare a transition program so that it would gradually displace workers, train workers for new jobs, etc. Rather, it just went in, did it, and people got devastated. So the effect in Mexico in the short run was to bifurcate the benefits, bifurcate the effects. That is, a reasonable number did well, and an equally sized number did not do well. And in the U.S. initially, I think it was many more people benefited in the U.S. because of the exports.
Mike Blum, however, takes sharp exception to the characterization of NAFTA as a deal that benefited only the elites.
I think it's fundamentally untrue, and basically put out by the AFL-CIO and those who were just opposed to it on its face, and people like Ross Perot who didn't understand the whole thing. There's no way in the world, in my view, that the American automobile industry, for example, can survive in today's economy without Mexico. It's almost totally dependent on Mexico production of component parts and in some cases more than just component parts for virtually everything that's assembled in North America. Assembled in the United States, not North America. Detroit, the cost of labor in Detroit or in the U.S. automobile plants is not 10 times more than it is in Mexico. It's 20 times more than it is in Mexico. And so American automobile manufacturers, to stay competitive with Japanese who are making cars in America, have got to find ways to cut their cost in transportation of large truckloads of unfinished raw material to a Mexico plant's not going to be successful. The plants are now moving to the border on the U.S. side to feed Mexico component manufacturing in the Mexico side. So they're taking advantage of keeping some of the production on the U.S. side and making things in Mexico. That's not taking jobs away from the United States. That's creating jobs. Another example is West Bend, Indiana. West Bend had a plant in mainland China making things that we make coffee out of. They moved the entire operation from China to Reynosa, and in so doing created 70 jobs in West Bend that didn't exist because all the production and all the component part manufacturing, everything was in the Pacific. It's now back over to North America. Panasonic's coming to Reynosa. It's bringing an entire operation. They're going to start sourcing products made in America because it's going to cost less than shipping them from the Pacific. And it's going to take some time. This is not a one-year experiment. This is going to take several years before the real truth is known. And, of course, Mexico's current peso problems are having a dampening effect, but that, too, will be corrected.
You're listening to Common Ground and a discussion of the effects of NAFTA on U.S. relations with Mexico. Our guests are Rodolfo de la Garza of the University of Texas, John Wirth of Stanford University, and economic development specialists Pete Garcia of Arizona and Michael Blum of McAllen, Texas. Printed transcripts of Common Ground and audio cassettes of this program are available from Journal Graphics. Listen at the end of the broadcast for details. Common Ground is a service of the Stanley Foundation, a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization that conducts varied programs and activities meant to provoke thought and encourage dialogue on world affairs. John Wirth doesn't see NAFTA in terms of winners and losers according to economic class. Rather, he is looking at whole communities on the North American continent, some of whom stand to prosper while others suffer.
That's the really interesting point. What regions within these three countries and then among them are going to be the winners? And there'll be certain areas that almost surely are going to come out. Toronto and Michigan, that whole Great Lakes area, is very well positioned. We're talking about McAllen, Reynosa. This is a very strong one. Seattle, that's very clear. And that's one way of looking at it. So you would break it down immediately into the smaller regions and look at the patterns that are changing there and the patterns of economic growth. But overall, free trade is a formula for, in the long run, to have the levels of wealth go up. You have to have government with it, however. It's not something that will take place just by itself. And so you need an emphasis on standards. You need an emphasis on giving people access. And I would expect to find, just as we now have close cooperation in the environment between the three countries, I would expect to find very soon very close cooperation in training of workers so we can produce a workforce on a regional basis that can more adequately advance the interests of the three countries together. On the productive side and on the consuming side. Education is going to be a huge, big number, and I think we'll look at it not simply on sub-regional basis, which is the easiest way to do it, but on a transnational basis, which would be really imaginative and very interesting. To get a North American apprentice program, for example, you might say that this is a visionary way of looking at things, but integration is going so fast that we are not training the kind of workforce in the three countries that we need. And we need to give people access who want to work, have the energy to work, have the right age group, and target them and get them so they can participate. So this would be my long-range answer to this question of the winners and losers in terms of the immediate question of NAFTA. It has to have something more than trade. It has to have a social education policies to go with it. One thing we probably won't have is large income transfers like Europe has done in Germany itself between West Germany and East Germany. It's not in the cards there's going to be huge income transfers to Mexico. There will be an opening of opportunity for Mexico and Mexicans through free trade.
Is there still a danger that the long-term vision can be cut off by some of the short-term dislocations that occur?
I think we could derail it by not developing a social and a cultural and a political framework so people understand this. The economics of it are right. They're going to work. But people have to understand that they have to make a commitment to it in terms of their own values so that Mexicans and Canadians are no longer seen as foreigners or the others, but as people that are interesting to get to know and as people who are important to us and are important in our lives. And then they become real people and rather than problems. They become people with whom you can do business, but also with whom you can get into partnership and might want to get to know. And I think without developing this sort of social and cultural commitment with the politics to go with it, that it might well not work.
The devaluation of the peso last December and the U.S. bailout of Mexico, or the U.S.-led bailout anyway of Mexico, do you think that's done some damage to the implementation of NAFTA?
Well, it's probably the worst result from it, from what I can tell now, is the crisis of confidence. Mexicans are less sure of themselves and their capacity to manage this relationship, which really was a bid for leadership to be a major country. And they've got a farther, longer way to go for that. The United States has now, and Canada both, are now realized some of the responsibilities that are going with this partnership. The responsibilities are more awkward than they thought at first. It's not going to be cost-free, but it's going to require a very deep policy coordination among the three governments. And the important thing is that this crisis of confidence not lead to a pulling back of the commitment to work things out among the three.
From his post in Arizona, Pete Garcia says he saw the effects of the peso devaluation almost immediately.
The ripples that have occurred have been primarily along the border where you had, and in Tucson where you had a lot of the people from Mexico that came across to this site to buy some of the products that they had been used to buying. And when their money devaluated, I mean, it really put a real crunch on the people coming over, because even though we do have a border in many of the cities in Arizona, people cross, I mean, in Nogales and San Luis and Agua Prieta, and I mean, they cross like it's like there's really no border there. So a lot of the commerce is done on this side. We cross to that side for meals. So there's a real problem. The problem that occurred for many of the folks going to that side was that, you know, trying to determine how much the currency was going to be worth. But it's put a real damper on a lot of the purchases on this side.
And in McAllen, Texas, Michael Blum has also seen the impact, but he doesn't think its effects will be lasting.
In our case, it's been severely impacted many of the downtown merchants whose primary focus was catering to Mexican nationals. It's had less of an impact on the regional malls and the major national outlet stores that are in our metropolitan area. It's had a greater impact in El Paso and in Brownsville because they are literally on the border. And so their daily activity is much more affected. But just as a measure of a number, and this, you know, you can do anything with numbers, but these numbers tell a fairly interesting story. The first 4 months after the devaluation in McAllen, sales tax collections dropped less than 1%.
So is it your view that the peso devaluation is sort of a temporary setback, that Mexico's economy is going to be reformed and move forward then?
Yes, I think it is a temporary setback. I think much like few of us would ever have imagined the world without the Berlin Wall or without Mandela in prison or without the Soviet Union or without Czechoslovakia and Hungary and Poland being communist countries, and yet all of those things have changed. This too will change in Mexico. They'll get their act together. They'll straighten up their political and economic system. those of us along the border will ultimately benefit greatly by their improvements. And I think the whole country benefits with a strong Mexico. We haven't talked about this yet in the seminar, but clearly there's a national interest of security to have a strong Mexico. And what we do in foreign policy clearly affects that national security interest.
And finally, I put the question of Mexico's economic future to Mexican specialist Rodolfo de la Garza.
On the one hand, optimists see the devaluation as sort of a temporary setback for Mexico, and the others, people wonder about whether the U.S. and the international community, in a sense, are going to have to constantly be bailing Mexico out. Where do you come out on that?
Well, I mean, a temporary setback, what does that mean? Mexican people now have earnings less than they did in the early 1980s. I mean, you know, so how long will it take them to get back where they were then? A temporary setback means, if you're a worker, if you have a small business, 15 years, is that temporary? I'm not sure what I call temporary. I think it may be true that Mexico as an economy has, as a society, has the potential to become a thriving society again. But they have a very real problem. They have a demographic growth curve that is out of sync with its economic growth curve. And they have to find a way to get the economy and the demography growing in such a way that there are jobs produced for the people. We don't know if that, they don't know, nobody knows if that's going to happen. So this crisis, Mexico may in fact become self-sufficient in the way, to the extent that any country now is self-sufficient, or may always be very weak and vulnerable because of that demographic mismatch with the economy.
Our guests in this edition of Common Ground have been Rodolfo de la Garza of the University of Texas, John Wirth, president of the North American Institute and professor of Latin American Studies at Stanford University, Pete Garcia, president of Chicanos por la Causa in Phoenix, and Michael Blum, an economic development consultant in McAllen, Texas. For Common Ground, I'm Jeff Martin. For a printed transcript or an audio cassette of this program, please send $5 per transcript or $11.70 per cassette to Common Ground, show number 9526, Journal Graphics, 1535 Grant Street, Denver, Colorado, 80203. Again, ask for program number 9526. To order by credit card, call toll-free 1-800-825-5746. If you'd like more information about the Stanley Foundation, or if you have some comments about the program, write to us at 216 Sycamore Street, Muscatine, Iowa, 52761. Again, the toll-free number to order cassettes or transcripts is 1-800-825-5746. Lederman created our theme music. Common Ground was produced and funded by the Stanley Foundation.